Gemara Shabbos tells us a very daunting description that at the end of 120 years, when each of us will meet our Maker, when we'll come upstairs, we'll be asked a series of questions. And the questions are those that define our lives. Questions don't include how much money did you make, what kind of car did you drive, how late did you stay at the office. But the questions include the core definition of what it means to be a Jew, to be an Eved Hashem, of what it means to be a thinking and a giving and a devoted servant of the Almighty to help His plan, His mission for this world. And one of those questions, one of the questions that will be posed to us is, Tipisili Yeshua. God, His ministering angels, the heavenly court will want to know, when you were downstairs, when you were living in the comfort of the palm trees and lying by the pool of Boca Raton, Tipisili Yeshua, were you satisfied? Were you comfortable? Were you happy? Were you complacent? Or did you want more? Were you disturbed by the Jewish condition? Were you bothered by the sense of churban, the sense of destruction, not only the lack of a Beis HaMikdash, when you visit the Kotel and you look up, are you smiling and taking pictures? Or do you at least for one moment recoil with a sense of pain that this is a poor counterfeit substitute to the way it was meant to be and to the way it was? Do we feel the churban, the destruction of the Sila Kashchina, of the absence of God's intense presence in our midst? That we're living in a world, maybe more than any in Jewish history, of Jews who are filled with doubt and uncertainty. Is there a God and does He care? Do we feel connected and pained by the churban, by the devastation of the Jewish statistics around the world, of assimilation and of intermarriage? Do we look around our community, Boca Raton, 130,000 Jews, over 90% of whom have no idea that tonight is Tisha B'Av, or what a Beis HaMikdash was, or what life was meant to be? They didn't just come off of an enjoyable Shabbos, they don't know what Shabbos is. Do we feel that pain, that they're lacking, that meaning, that purpose, that our community is fractured and broken? Are we connected to the churban, to the destruction of the divisiveness within our people, the infighting, the name-calling, and the condemnation, the dismissiveness? Are we connected to the personal churban of people around us, the challenges, the people who are walking around broken, struggling in their marriages, or in pain because of the challenge within their children, financially under enormous pressure, not sure how they'll pay the next bill, desperately longing for companionship and marriage, or so devastated each month that they try to have a baby and build a family? Do we feel the churban of the growth of anxiety and of loneliness and of pain and of suffering that's all around us? Are we pained when we read about anti-Semitism growing in Europe? Are we pained when we hear about 200 rockets in one day and what that means for countless families constantly running to bomb shelters? We will be asked when we meet our Maker, did you go about business as usual? Or Tzipisili Yeshua, did you ever pause and stop and wish for something more, better, different? According to the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, we prepare to answer that question when we concentrate, when we say the words in our Amida L'Yeshuasva Kivinu Kol Hayom, that God, we long all day, every day, we want things to be better. We want peace and serenity for the Jewish people. We long for a day that all our brothers and sisters will see Your guiding hand and want to feel connected with You. We long for the day of Jewish unity and community and peoplehood. We long for a day that there's no more suffering or pain, that there's no more personal churban in people's lives. That's the question for these next 24 hours. It's a preview of what's to come at the end of our lives. Tzipisili Yeshua. To stop and pause and take stock and ask, were we satisfied, were we complacent, were we happy, or did we long for more? Do we anticipate longingly the day the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt and all that means? Are we pained by its absence in our life? Because what we're sad about and what we become exuberant in anticipation for says everything about us. It's exciting that our community recently had a kosher Dunkin' Donuts open. But the level of excitement and anticipation and celebration, halavai, halavai, halavai. See, peacefully Yeshua, we'd be as excited for a third base on Mikdash. And the news that Starbucks broke off its relationship with the Star K and the kashrus there is now in question. I saw online the level of mourning and grieving. It's sad. It's funny, but really it's much more sad. That the excitement for a Dunkin' Donuts and the devastation of a Starbucks far, far outweighs and supersedes the way we feel about the absence of a Beis HaMikdash and the longing, the anticipation, the countdown for when it will come back again. Maharal on Netzach Yisrael explains that when the Talmud tells us that sinas chinam, that it was baseless hatred that led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, says the Maharal, that makes complete sense. Because the Beis HaMikdash, that edifice, that building, that central location, was meant to be unifying. It was meant to bring a closeness, a connection, a peoplehood. There was one central place for the Jewish people. It had one Kohen Gadol, one high priest. It had one Mizbeach, one altar. One Avoda, one service. And no matter which gate you came into, of which there were 13 corresponding with each of the tribes, and a 13th for those who didn't know with which tribe they came, no matter which diverse entrance you came from, when inside you were in one place, one single complete nation, one people with one purpose. And says the Maharal, when God looked down and he said, my kids are fighting. They can't get along. They can't cooperate. With all the enemies on the outside, you'd think they collaborate and become one, but no. The moment there's a sense of quiet or peace from the outside, they become enemies with one another. And if the Beis HaMikdash is not fulfilling its purpose to unify us, to unite us as one, then Hashem says, why should I leave it? And why should I reside in it? And why should I allow and enable it? And so he withdrew his countenance and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because when we act with disunity in the place of unity, we are unworthy, we are undeserving. You know, when Hashem withdrew from his Beis HaMikdash and he spread us across the globe, no longer one unified people in one land, speaking one language, but now living in different cultures and among different peoples, and through some of our millennia under great oppression and persecution, another with more safety and security, but still guests in other people's homes. When he spread us out, he set us up as an experiment. But Moskowitz was sharing with me the other day this insight, that when he spread us out, he told us to build in the center of each of our communities a mikdash ma'at, a miniature temple, a mock temple, to set it up to see whether in fact we could now get along, whether we could prove worthy, whether we could merit redemption, to come back together as one, not with miniature temples across the world, but one temple, one Beis HaMikdash again in Yerushalayim. And he placed us in his mikdash ma'at, these miniature temples, and he said, let's see how you behave. Have you learned? Have you grown? Have you recalibrated your priorities? Have you rededicated yourselves? Have you become devoted to what matters and to what's important and what it's all about? Because when we can prove we're worthy in the microcosm, in the mak, Beis HaMikdash, in the mikdash ma'at, in the poor, essentially counterfeit version of what was, then we can come back home to what's meant to be. And so Tisha B'Av is also a time that we look at our own community, at our own shul, at our own lives, at our mikdash ma'at, and we take stock. Have we conducted and do we conduct ourselves in our mikdash ma'at in a way that makes us worthy of the Beis HaMikdash in all of its glory? Why do we come to shul? And when do we come to shul? And what do we do when we are in shul? And what have we contributed to the atmosphere of our shul? Not just our shul, every shul has to take stock. Is it a place of reverence? Do we walk through the portals, through that door, and feel a sense of awe for the Almighty, the sanctity, the sacredness of that space. Have we contributed to making our shul a safe space, that people of different political affiliations and orientations, of people of all backgrounds and educations, of people of all hashkafas and walks of life can feel safe? Not that they'll be criticized or judged or looked at or stared down or ignored or neglected. Have we made it a friendly place? Do we only acknowledge the existence of our closest friends while walking by and making others feel invisible? Do we say Good Shabbos? Do we offer a greeting? Do we extend a hand? Do we welcome someone we've never met before? Have we helped make it a spiritual place? That those who are living with Khurban elsewhere, those who are struggling in their homes or at their work or in their lives, at least when they walk into shul, it's spiritual, it's strong, it's healthy. It's a place of support and of love and of warmth, of acceptance. Have we helped make it a reflective space, a serious space? Or do we come here and we gossip? Do we come here and we talk? Do we come here and we take the activity that's meant to be the most sober and serious and take it so callously? Do we disturb the people around us who are trying to connect by talking to one another, showing a great insensitivity, putting aside our spiritual connection, but simply being rude and discourteous to those around us? Do we embrace the words of our prophets, who every Shabbos we have the privilege to hear read in shul, who offer insight not only to their time, but to ours as well? Their legitimate need to socialize, part of a community, is to connect with others. It's a legitimate need, but it has to be done in a legitimate time, a legitimate place, and with legitimate activities and legitimate boundaries. Do we put our siddur and chumash away at the end of davening? Do we throw our garbage out in the garbage? Are we kind and grateful to our custodial staff? Do we give what we can of our resources? Do we take advantage of the classes and learning opportunities? How do we view our mikdash ma'at? Do we take it for granted? Are we casual about it? Or is it a mikdash? Is our mikdash ma'at a shul, a holy temple? In our davening for the restoration of Yerushalayim, we say, Uvineo sabakarav bi'ameinu binyan olam. We ask Hashem to build it, build Yerushalayim, build the Beis HaMikdash, which on a literal level means an eternal building, binyan olam. The third Beis HaMikdash never to be destroyed, never to be vulnerable, never to be targeted. Let the third Beis HaMikdash come and bring a peace and serenity to the world and a recognition of God's dominion, to have clarity for His existence and His role in our lives, to feel a confidence of His love, to feel His children. A binyan olam, a permanent building that will last forever. But there's a second meaning. A binyan olam means that it takes the olam, it takes the contributions of the whole world to bring this binyan. It's an amazing thing that the third Beis HaMikdash, you can't buy it for all the money in the world. The greatest philanthropist, the greatest billionaire could step forward and offer the most amount of money, but that's not what's going to bring the Beis HaMikdash. It's not about writing a check or swiping a credit card. It's about looking in the mirror and evaluating who we are and how we live our lives and how we relate to one another. And how we treat the gift of the microcosm of the Mikdash Ma'at, while we are guests spread out around the world. The Binyan, the third Beis HaMikdash, requires the Olam. The whole world, the whole community, every individual has to give, has to contribute, has to do their part, transcending time and place. Our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents made their contributions, and our children and grandchildren will make theirs. But today, tonight, tomorrow is about asking ourselves, what's our contribution? What's our attitude? How do we behave? Where can we do more? Chavetz Chaim gives a mashal. Chavetz Chaim says, if someone were to come to your door tomorrow, Tisha B'Av, the observance of Tisha B'Av, And they'd say, I'm here to collect for the Beis HaMikdash. Would you make a contribution? There'll be a plaque when it'll be built. It'll list all the names of the people who gave. No one in their right mind would shut the door and say, go to the rabbi. Everyone would run to get their checkbook, to grab their credit card number, their Apple Pay, their PayPal, whatever means they could. Who wouldn't want to be included among those whose names will be listed eternally in perpetuity as having built the third Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim? Who would say no? Says the Chafetz Chaim, the knock comes on our door every single day. And the ask is not for money. And the contribution can't be filled out in a checkbook. Every single day Hashem sits and longs and waits and He says, which brick are you going to put in the wall? What contribution will you make? How will your name be listed among those who built the Beis HaMikdash? What's your role in the Mikdash Ma'at? What's your commitment to be more serious and more spiritual? To be more sensitive to others? To be part of community? Not only in the shul, but outside of it. To care and to be sensitive. As we spoke about this morning, to not sit in judgment and draw unfair conclusions, to see a chelik of the story and lead to machlokas, but to make the effort to see the whole story, shalem, the complete story that will lead to shalom, to preserve a sense of peace. To realize what a small, small minority we are within the Jewish world and the Jews among the whole world, and how we can't afford to be enemies with one another. To be warm and outgoing to all those around us, in shul, in our invitations to our homes, not only our closest friends or those the same as us, whose children are in the same schools as us, who daven in the same minyan as us, who vote the same way as us, who have the same attitude as the policies of the world as we do. Not only to love every Jew, but to make the effort to like every Jew. Tzipisili Yeshua. Tzipisili Yeshua. Are we sick and tired of the churban, of the pain, the suffering, the solitude that we'll read about in a moment in Eicha? Eicha is not about the bricks and the mortar. And these next 24 hours are not about mourning the burning of a building. It's about the human pain and suffering, the loneliness that ensued. And building our brick, contributing our part to dispel it, to bring about an end to it. In our Amidah, in our Shemoneh Esrei, three times a day, we end the bracha of Yerushalayim, we say, Bonei Yerushalayim, that God is building Yerushalayim. We don't say with confidence, Yiboneh, Yivne Yerushalayim, that He'll build it. We say, Bonei Yerushalayim, He's building it in real time. But if you visit the Kotel, if you go on Har HaBayis, and you're still screamed at, and things can be thrown at you, and you're still not allowed to daven or bring up tefillin, and you ask, Bonei Yerushalayim? It's Yivne, it's not Bonei. Explained Rav Kook, the Ribbono Shalom, the Almighty, is Bonei Yerushalayim. Like the great Mishulach in the sky, He's collecting every contribution we make around the world. The Mikdashei Ma'at, the temples, on every continent, in every country, in every city. Our shul here in Boca Raton, He's Bonei Yerushalayim. He is building because He's collecting the contributions we're given. When you say good Shabbos to someone in the row behind you or in front of you, when you put your sitter away, when you have an urge to talk to the person next to you, but you realize, you know what, that'll disturb the davening of the people around me. When you want to walk out because you want to socialize, but you say the words of the prophets are too important to neglect. When you're too tired to attend the class, but you make the effort to get there anyway. When you think about who's shut in and lonely and hasn't had an invitation, and you make that phone call. When you check on people who've experienced a churban, the loss of a spouse, for which there's almost no greater pain than the loneliness that ensues. Those who've experienced a diagnosis that they're filled with doubt of what will be. Those in financial crisis, not sure how they'll put the next meal on the table, or pay the next year's tuition, or make the upcoming simcha. When you reach out to the people who are living a churban, then you're making a contribution. Hashem is collecting them, and He is Bonei Yerushalayim in real time. He's doing it as we speak. So my friends, as we listen to Eicha, the words of the great prophet, and as we sit low to the floor, and we're not imitating mourning, we are mourning. There are people in this room who sat Shiva this year, and as they sit on the floor tonight, it's bringing them back to the pain of that loss. And there are people in this room, sadly, tragically, who will sit Shiva this coming year. Some who unfortunately are anticipating it, and others who wouldn't imagine in the wildest dreams. And this is not an imitation. We are sitting low to the ground because we are in mourning. We are grieving for the way we treat one another. We are grieving for the way we treat our mikdash ma'at. We are grieving for the suffering and the churba and the loneliness. We are grieving for the Jewish condition in the world in which the overwhelming majority of Jews do not see Judaism the way we do. They don't feel Hashem's presence in their life. They don't understand how their life is enriched by Torah and mitzvos, the statistics of assimilation, and where we are headed in other denominations is nothing to be triumphant or celebrate. It's a reason to sit on the floor and mourn and cry and grieve. And so I implore you tonight as we listen to Eicha and recite those kinos and sing the songs in our kumzits, to sit and to think, what's your next contribution, Tzipisili Yeshua? How by next Tisha B'Av, please God, we won't observe it this way, we'll celebrate in Yerushalayim, but how by a year from now will you look back and say, you know what? Over this past year I've developed a different attitude to our Mikdash Ma'at. I came more on time, I talked less in Minyan, I concentrated more, I was less judgmental, I connected more with community. I found out how I could volunteer and what I can do and how I could step up. I dug deeper and gave more because I could, and I'm not sure what was holding me back. I attended more classes. I walked in with a greater reverence. How will we improve our attitude to our Mikdash Ma'at? Because when we do, we'll be able to answer the question, Tzipisili Yeshua, yes, we longed more than for a kosher donut. And we grieved more profoundly for the loss of a caramel latte. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we understood what was important. And every day we asked ourselves, how today will we give our next brick? How will we build that Beis HaMikdash? How will we make our contribution so we are included in Yerubonei Yerushalayim? And when we do, please God, we'll be zocha together, we'll merit to not have to live in a Mikdash Ma'at, but to experience the Beis HaMikdash B'Shleimusa, the complete Beis HaMikdash in all of its fullness, Ben Heira V'Yameinu.